From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on November 14th, 2016, with the passing of award-winning journalist Gwen Ifill. She was a fixture for American news viewers, an icon in her field, an inspiration to women who wanted to make their own mark in journalism. While Ifill was a trailblazer, women of color are still significantly underrepresented in American newsrooms. Women of color make up between 20 and 25% of the U.S. population, but women of color represent less than 8% of U.S. newspaper and magazine staff, 12% of local TV news staff, and about 6% of local radio staff. That's according to the Women's Media Center's report titled The Status of Women of Color in the U.S. News Media 2018. So what is the impact of this underrepresentation? Our panel will have a lot to talk about this hour. Welcome back to Tiana Magnon, who's a reporter right here at WXXI News and editor-in-chief of Open Mic Magazine Online. Great to have you back. Far walk for you. About 10 feet
across the hall.
How are you, by the way?
Pretty good. Thank you.
Our colleague Tiege Jenkins is here. Tiege is a manager and producer of City 12 and host of Arts in Focus on WXXI-TV. Tiege, nice to see you in this studio here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Casey Jones is a reporter at WHEC-TV. Welcome back to you as well.
Happy to be here.
Well, there's a lot of different directions we could go, but I guess I want to start with a question on just what you see as the main impact of underrepresentation. Is it the way we tell stories or the stories we choose to tell or not tell at all? I'll start with you, Tiana.
Of course. I think it's really the combination of the two. First and foremost, what stories are being pitched to the editor, but then also how you go about getting that news. So are you talking to the same sources? Are you speaking to people who, you know, always look the same? And you have a lot of stories where there's that opportunity to really reach across demographics, but if you don't have that representation, you don't always have the network to do that. So sometimes, you know, I can reach out to another reporter and say, hey, do you know someone who may be an excellent voice for this? But if you don't have that diversity in your newsroom, it's really hard to get new sources.
Okay. Tiege? Biggest impact. Oh, Tiege is saying, Tiege is making some notes. Tiege is scribbling away. So, all right, so we're going to come back to you. Casey, the biggest impact of underrepresentation of women of color in American news media is what to you?
I think Tiana said it very well. I mean, it has an impact on the stories that we tell and the way that we tell them. When there aren't enough of a diverse population in your newsroom, sometimes you see the same sort of characters in the news. For example, you see the Lord Jesus, there's a fire lady, you know, instead of seeing, a better representation of the Black community or the Hispanic community or any community. So I think it's very important for a lot of us to be around. By us, I mean people of color, because we can kind of show people give them a better idea of who we really are instead of perpetuating these stereotypes.
Okay. And Tiege, what do you see as the biggest impact in that lack of representation?
And I agree with both Casey and with Tiana, and just feel that we are highly underrepresented and we need to be heard more, and we need to have more of our stories to be told by us, and that we would give more insight into what our issues are or what our stories are.
So it's stories, not just what stories we're telling, but who's telling the stories. I think it's a great point. Listeners, if you want to join the conversation this hour, you can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to read some of the words of Kelly Goff, who's a journalist working for the Daily Beast. This is some of what she wrote on the passing of PBS's Gwen Ifill. I'll read it and have our panel weigh in on this. Goff writes the following, quote, "Her trailblazing extended beyond race. When women of color finally began securing on-air opportunities, many fit a certain mold early on. They were often lighter-skinned or had more Eurocentric features. Consider news legends Sue Simmons, Carol Simpson, Dana Tyler, all stellar journalists in their own right, whom I admire immensely. Their appearances, however, appealed to white standards of beauty. Gwen's skin color and trademark short do and the enormous acclaim she enjoyed sent a message to all of us who aspired to follow in her footsteps that we could succeed based on the quality of our work and our work alone, even if we didn't have fair skin or a tiny nose, and I have neither. That's what Kelly Goff wrote after the passing of Gwen Ifill. So, Casey, let me start with you there. Some really, I think, strong stuff about the standards of what we choose to elevate and what power brokers, almost always white power brokers, choose to elevate. What do you make of what Kelly Goff had to say there?
Well, she was absolutely right. I mean, sometimes there's this mold that we feel that we need to fit. You know, lighter skinned is always seen as I mean, this goes back to, you know, history, where the lighter skinned people were in the house and the darker skinned people were in the field back in the slavery days. And after that, you know, there was always an idea that lighter skinned people were of higher class or were easily accepted. So Gwen Ifill really did break that mold. And even people like Oprah Winfrey broke that mold and let us know that you don't have to be a certain skin complexion to succeed. And it means a lot. I mean, even today, sometimes beauty is seen as a lighter skin, a more finer hair. So anytime anybody can succeed outside of that mold, it's great for other people because we all aren't light skin, curly hair people. We're all different.
Teach?
And exactly, and I agree with that. And when I saw Gwen Ifill, I saw more of a reflection of myself because I'm not a light-skinned person. And it gave me inspiration to step in front of a camera. And we struggle with this in the Black community where even with us, we tend to treat people with lighter skin a little bit differently. People become more favored because they're fairer skin, or people just look at that as the ideal beauty. And we have now, you know, I call it a crisis where women are bleaching their children's skin. They're using skin bleachers to make themselves lighter and to better assimilate into a culture that's not, you know, it's outside of our own. And we need to represent all facets of Black women and Black people. And we need to show, you know, the people who are watching that we come from all different backgrounds, we have all different shapes, and we're all different tones. But if our stories are compelling, then they should be told.
Mm-hmm. Tiana.
Wow, I think they pretty much covered that. But for me, I am light skinned, but I saw my mom and Gwen. You know, I think we get so caught up on what our broadcasters look like that we forgot, like, the rest of America does not look the same. And so even if you can't always identify with a newscaster, you have a friend or you have a family member, you have something, and that allows you to connect with these newscasters even more. And to me, I think it shatters, you know, these perceptions of what a lot of people have about darker-skinned Black women, which are more often than not negative. They're horrible. They're horrible ways to look at people. And I think Gwen was able to get up there and say, everything that you view, everything that you see me as is wrong. And here is every newscast to prove that to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kelly Goff is keying in one place on not just Gwen's skin color, but her short do. She's not going to have, you know, the classic anchor hair. Gwen's going to wear her hair the way she wants to wear her hair. Probably an important... Don't let me speak for it, Tiana, but we've had conversations here. I mean, there are legal debates. There's laws about being able to fire somebody if they wear what we call dreadlocks, which, you know, is a big problem for women of color.
You see my hair. It's big right now. There is no taming it. And for a while, I mean, we would kill our hair with chemicals and heat and everything like that just to fit this look. When in reality, I mean, at least to me, my hair looks a lot better this way than when it was flat and lifeless.
It's
you
gorgeous.
Know? Thank you. I think so, a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it just also shows, I mean, Tej brought up diversity in Black people. And I think a lot of times we forget in mainstream America that Black people aren't monolithic. Our hair is curly. It's kinky. It's afro. Mm. It's frizzy. Sometimes it's straight. So I think having that hair, in addition to the skin tone, in addition to how you speak, in addition to where you come from, having all of that on a newscaster seat just really shatters things. Mm-hmm. And Casey can really talk about hair.
Yeah. In fact, last week, I decided that I didn't want to take 2.5 hours to straighten my hair and just went for it. I just went natural. Well, I've always been natural, but not always, but not the point.
Two and a half hours?
Yeah.
Two and a half hours.
Yes. 2.5 hours to straighten my hair. I said no this time, no burning my hair. came to work and I got nothing but positive responses. At that time, my news director actually wasn't there, so I was still, you know, on the fence about who liked it, but the general manager liked it, the assistant news director liked it, and yesterday, my news director, Casey Clark, said, "I love your natural hair," and that meant a lot, because he has really demonstrated a commitment to diversity since he's come in a couple years ago and started hiring more people of color. So it meant even more that he embraced my natural hair and who I really was, because it really does show that we do have a commitment to diversity at News 10 NBC.
Do you hear anything from viewers?
Yes, great things. I have messages in my inbox right now saying how much they love my hair. Aww. And it really means a lot. I even had Norma Holland reach out to me from Channel 13. I'm on air and I'm getting a call from Norma. I'm like, Norma?
That's awesome.
And it was her telling me that she liked my hair. So I really appreciate that. It was a bold thing, because other women sometimes feel like they need to ask for permission before they do it, because, you know, working in an industry where our image is constantly judged, you know, we feel like we need to ask, you know, the man before we do anything. But I did it and I got great results, and I'll keep doing it because it's healthier for my hair.
Good for you.
Well, let's listen to what Danielle Bainbridge had to say on this. Danielle Bainbridge is a Yale doctoral student and the host of the PBS web series The Origin of Everything, which is awesome, by the way. And I happened to be off this week. Producer Megan Mack hosted the show for about 2 weeks. Did an awesome job right here, and I was really envious of this conversation, because this is one of those conversations where you have with someone who's the work that Danielle Bainbridge and the crew there with The Origin of Everything is doing. You ought to be watching it. It's really great. But they got into some of these issues. I want to listen to some of the exchange here, the value of seeing people who look like you. This is Danielle Bainbridge.
It's hard sometimes when you think that there isn't an avenue for you or a space for you, especially in educational content, because I can't say that I see too many other Black women hosts who are doing educational content. Not that they're not making it, not that they're not a ton of Black women academics who I look up to and admire, but sometimes I don't necessarily see them represented on big platforms. And so when I had this opportunity, it was in the back of my mind to think, okay, you have a chance to do something that's interesting and smart, that people could be enthusiastic about and also could stretch their imagination of what it means to be someone who is a knowledge producer. And what does that person look like?
Well, she's really, I ought to go back and listen on the WXXI Connections archive there for the whole podcast. It's a great hour. Danielle Bainbridge is a wonderful interview. But I thought, Tej, in that moment, it's interesting because she's talking about seeing people who look like her. She's also talking about this great opportunity. And I want to ask you if there is unfair pressure then on women of color in journalism when they are in that opportunity to either conform to whatever standards have been set. We've talked a little bit about hair, but there's other things. And pressure to sort of succeed and set that example.
From my personal experience, I've heard that from other people in the industry more than I feel that pressure. Mm-hmm. I think that for me, you know, I present myself the way that I want to, and I feel that I don't have a problem with that, nor does anyone around me seem to. But I have heard of such a pressure in trying to look a certain way or trying to appeal to a certain, whatever, your certain demographic. But for me personally, I haven't experienced that.
Good. Tiana, you?
I think it happens in very small ways where, you know, you're creating content and you'll hear an editor second guess you, even though you are the person who did all the interviews and that kind of thing. So for me, it's especially at WXXI, I've always used this as a way to kind of get other cultures in. Mm-hmm. Can we use Spanish in our broadcast? Can we allow people out translate, do that kind of thing? But for me, I did feel, you sometimes feel a little pressure to, you know, enunciate things a certain way, to, you know, maybe not write the quotes the way that person said it. Clean it up a little bit, even though that's what they said. And to me, I think Ebonics, I think slang, I love it, and I'm going to put it in the quote. But there's a lot of times where you have editors who kind of second guess the validity of that, and they ask you to change those very small things. And to me, that's another example of taking out, you know, the times you could have a little bit of diversity. You don't have to clean up those quotes. People in the suburbs should hear how people in the city speak.
Okay, and this is such an important point here. A little bit later this hour, I'm going to play a clip of Gwen Ifill talking about racism and some of the notes and the comments. I'm thrilled that Casey is getting essentially nothing but good feedback for just a simple decision not to spend 2.5 hours in your hair. I think it's great.
It means a lot.
I don't doubt that people of color, women of color, occasionally experience the opposite.
Oh, no. And even before I got here, I definitely experienced it. Okay. Just didn't experience it here.
So we're going to talk about that in a moment. Before I get there, I will say one of the, probably the best intern we ever had on the program did an awesome report for us and on tiny houses. Now, she was a woman of color. And I got an actual handwritten letter, a snail mail letter, which is a lot of effort to put into a letter, from a white man who wanted to just let me know that report really could have sounded essentially didn't say it in these words, but could have sounded whiter. You know, and wanted to make sure we all understood that the audience understood what they thought were incorrect X, Y, and Z. I don't know that I've ever been more angry at work reading that handwritten letter. And I kind of walked away from it for a while. It just burned in my brain what it actually took to write a handwritten letter to go lecture somebody on the natural way that they speak. I am not saying that we all can't enunciate better. I speak quickly. There are times where I tell myself, slow down so the audience can hear you. We can all present a little better. But what that person was really saying was, there's a white standard, and she's not white enough. And is that kind of what you're talking about, Tiano?
Yeah, there's that, you know, choosing, kind of getting nitpicky on how I say things. But even my latest report on opioids, I mean, this has gone flawlessly, but in another newsroom, you know, it could have been an issue. I was recording, and to me, it's very important to say all Spanish words as they sound.
Yes.
I'm not gonna Puerto Rican, you know, it's a Puerto Rican. So, and I've been very fortunate in this newsroom to be able to introduce our listeners to, this is how you say these words. I like to think I'm like Giada. You know how she's all? But I think it's very important, from your quotes to how people say things, just to introduce people to new ways of speaking and new ways of language.
Okay. Casey, some thoughts on Casey and TJ. I want to hear from you as well on this, and just this notion of policing that kind of speech. Go ahead.
Oh, it still happens. I just saw a Facebook message. I don't know who they were talking about, but they said, can you please tell your reporters to stop saying Brighton is Brighton? And I think they were talking about Jazz Williams. And I mean, she's a black woman. And, you know, just to nitpick something like Brighton or Brighton, I mean, everybody speaks differently. She's not from here. And because her voice sounds the way it sounds, it's, you know, another element of diversity to our newscast. Everybody should not sound the same. America doesn't sound the same. So if everybody's for America, then they should be for diversity, too, and different, you know, dialects.
Teach.
I just thought about just one incident that happened when I used to host the WXXI program, Assignment the World, and we would get these letters that came in from students from across the country. And that's exactly, and I said on the show, I would say letters, and someone did send a mail addressing this, that please tell your host that she says letters spelled L-E-D-D-E-R-S. She's supposed to pronounce it, and then in caps, letters. And that's just, I think that was just the one thing that's ever really stood out for me. But I...
And that's not even really a black-white thing. That's right. An American thing. If you want to try to sound more British, start by turning your T's back into actual T's and turn your S's into S's, because Americans turn S's into Z's and T's into D's.
Right.
But again, this is just how people decide. This is the one standard and the only standard that's okay, and we're going to let you know. Mm-hmm. I want to grab a phone call, and let me go to Pete in Pittsford. Go ahead.
Hi. the idea that everything is driven by money would lead me to think that if the people that run stations would follow the example of television and movies, they'd get a bigger audience if they put a more diverse cast in the news chair. I'm sure there's room to grow the audience for news. And, you know, you've already got all us white folks watching news. Change things up a little bit and expand your audience.
Well, thank you, Pete, but I'm not sure. I mean, Black Panther made no money this year. So, you know, so there's just not really an economic incentive to really lifting up voices and faces of color. Thank you, Pete.
Thanks for preaching, Pete.
You want to respond to that, Casey?
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, your news team should match the demographics of the community that you serve. And that is so important. People need to feel comfortable with watching you, and they would feel a lot more comfortable if they saw people who look like them.
Okay. Tej, what do you say to Pete?
Pete, I say that I totally agree, and that I've been told outside in the community, I had a woman very, very bluntly say to me, she's like, I love watching you on Arts in Focus because your skin is as dark as mine. Or, you know, like people do respond when they see that their community is being reflected. I mean, it's just not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Tiana?
Yeah. And I would actually throw in that, you know, already kind of Black women aren't as well represented. But when you think about it, Casey said, you know, our newsroom should reflect our cities. Mm-hmm. There aren't as many Latina reporters out there. And I mean, I love Norma Holland. Like, she's amazing. And it's just interesting to see how few Latinas there are, how few Black women there are, when we know that a lot of the news happens in the city where these people live. And it would be great to have Latina and Black women report on these stories and be able to add the context that I feel like a lot of suburban reporters just can't.
All right, I see the phone ringing again. In fact, a couple of lines ringing. Iggy in Cuca Park is next. Go ahead, Iggy.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
I just wanted to throw in my two cents on the people who are complaining because you're saying letters instead of letters and Brighton
letters
instead of Brighton. Okay. My rule of thumb always is if you enunciated well enough for me to understand that you meant to say letters, then I understood what you said and you were properly, I don't know, the word across the proper way that I understood what you meant, so I shouldn't really nitpick about little things like that because we all speak different. My wife's from mm-hmm. Brooklyn. And I'm from up here, and she always says, ask, ax.
I struggle with that.
I know what she's saying, so why is there a big deal with it? The other thing is as far as the news reporters, I listen to you guys quite often. My other favorite channel is Channel 10 News.
Thank you.
Okay, and I've watched you guys for years. Like, I've seen people retire. That's how long I've listened. I'm 57 years old. But the big thing is the only thing I need on my news people is I want my information. I want you guys to actually look like you're having a good time giving the information and smiling. I really don't care if you're, you know, what nationality you are, if you're a guy or a girl. I don't look at that up, people. I never have. And I grew up in a town where it was mostly Hansons, Jensens, Christensens, if you know what I mean. And we always kidded around about Pena and being very vanilla.
Still kind of.
And when I moved to New York and then came back, brought a lot of that with me, and I tell people, listen, the mix is the best. I mean, you don't just throw salt in it and do a stew when you're cooking. You put a lot of seasonings in there, and that's what makes it better. Mm-hmm. You don't just put salt in. So I just want to let you guys know I love the show. I love what you're talking about today, and I got to get into work now. But
thank you, Iggy. We're trying to make people late. Aww. We appreciate that. No, I think that's a fair point there. As long as we can really understand each other, I guess that makes sense to me.
Well, it's funny that you bring this up because my story is on North Clinton, and I say Clinton, like, and me and Randy actually got into this. Is it Clinton or is it Clinton? And Veronica was the one to say, you know, just see, let's record it this way, and if he hates it, we'll redo it. But it was so important to both of us to get that Clinton in there.
All right, Barb in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Barb.
Hi. I noticed right around and especially after the election of President Obama, which I miss, back in 2008, suddenly there were all these reporters of color on air who I hadn't seen before. And it was so great and also frustrating that, like, where were they hiding these people before this happened? And it just really struck me, and I really hope that and I'm not speaking about WXXI, I'm speaking about, you know, in the news in general. And I really hope that a lot of those people are still on air. I don't know, but just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, well, thank you, Barbara. In fact, on this subject, Nicole Hannah-Jones had a lot to say about the loss of people of color, of women of color, and, you know, what happens when there is sort of that the various factors and forces. And so let me just read a little bit from what Nicole Hannah-Jones had to say, and then we'll have our panelists respond on this. She said, quote, "My experience has been that people who hire in newsrooms talk about wanting diversity, but for some reason, when it comes down to hiring, candidates of color have some flaw and just couldn't make the cut. It happens again and again to the point that it feels systemic. I know several journalists of color, black and Latina women, who are extremely qualified for jobs. They interview but never hear anything. Sometimes we investigate on our own, and we get, 'She looks good on paper, but we heard she's hard to work with.' It's a stereotype that particularly black and Latina women have to deal with. It also tells me that, a lot of times, women think they're getting good references, and they're not. Over time, a lot of people get frustrated and just leave the industry, and it's a big loss. For an unemployed journalist who has had 7 or 10 interviews and nothing pans out, I don't think I can rightly tell that person not to leave the industry. We tend not to have a financial cushion, and it's hard to tell people to stay in a field that's not valuing them, where they are having a hard time finding full-time work. That's a precarious position." What do you make of that, Casey?
Well, I have a friend right now who, she has a master's degree and has been searching for a journalism job after her first contract ended for almost a year now. She's extremely qualified, but she does speak differently. She definitely has she's from St. Louis, and you can tell that she's from St. Louis. And I believe that is what is affecting her from getting a job. She's also darker skin. She wears her hair natural. So it's much harder for her to get a job. And I mean, she's more qualified than I was when I left my first job. So, I mean, the only thing I can make of that, even yesterday, we just had this conversation. What do you think it is? And she said, I mean, I don't know at this point. But I did have a friend who was searching for a job in this industry, and she wasn't getting any bites, and she was just fed up. So she wrote the last person back and said, "With all due respect, what is it?" And he said, "Right now, we already have enough African-American women." He said, AA. That's what he meant, African-American women.
We have enough?
Yes. And it's just, he said, 3 years ago, you would have been it. Mm. But right now, we're looking for white males, not AA females. Mm. So, I mean, he just outright said it. And, I mean, there you go. Confirmation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Teej?
I just wanted to echo, like, I've heard that same sentiment in one conversation that I had, and I mentioned diversity and why isn't there more of, why is it always being outnumbered? Why do I not see more reflections of my community or of myself? And the person that I was speaking to said that it's better to have one than none.
Mm.
And I thought that was pretty profound.
Wow, as in, don't complain, at least there's one. Hmm. Mm. Wow. Tiana, you want to weigh in on the idea of, you know, what Nicole Hannah-Jones is saying, it's hard to tell, especially women of color who have been turned down for job after job. Stay with it. Stay with journalism.
I mean, it's really hard. We're paid worse than everyone else in the newsroom. So even if you claw your way into a newsroom, good luck getting good pay, good luck getting the stories that you want to do, good luck getting, it's so many hurdles being a woman of color in media that if you're kind of locked out of that first thing of even getting into the newsroom, why would you keep, I guess, laying yourself bare for an industry that doesn't love you when you're thousands of dollars in debt? You're going to make, what, $30,000? It's so much easier to go to an industry that's going to appreciate you.
I want to read the numbers for you again as we get ready to take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and have Gwen Ifill's comments on racism that we ought to hear from the late Gwen Ifill on this. Here are the numbers again. Women of color make up between 20 and 25% of the U.S. population, but only about 12% of local TV news staff, about 8% of U.S. newspaper and magazine staff, roughly 6% of radio staff, local radio and news radio staff. That's according to the Women's Media Center's report titled "The Status of Women of Color in the U.S. News Media 2018. You're hearing from a couple of our WXXI colleagues, Tiana Magnon, a reporter, and also, by the way, the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Magazine Online. You can find more on Open Mic. They know where to find WXXI News. Where's Open Mic, Tiana?
OpenMicROC.com.
OpenMicRock.com. Casey Jones, reporter at WHEC-TV. Teach Jenkins, who's manager and producer of City 12 and the host of Arts in Focus on WXXI-TV. Let's get that break. We'll come right back to more of your calls, and we'll hear Gwen Ifill's words on this. But first, John, I should probably tell them what's coming up Monday on The Next Connections. Coming up on Monday, we're following up on Puerto Rico. Sometimes a disaster hits, media covers it for a day, a week, a month, and it's easy to forget. Well, there are local college students who have been there helping. We're going to hear from them, local leaders who have been there. We're going to get status report, making sure you're fully up to date on what's going on with Puerto Rico and recovery efforts. That is Monday on The Next Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I get to your phone calls, I want to hear what Gwen Ifill had to say about racism. This is from September 2009 as part of the Explorations in Black Leadership Project on C-SPAN. And she's talking about a note that was left for her when she was an intern at the Boston Herald American. This is Gwen Ifill, 2009.
I was very happy to be in a newsroom. That's what I'd always wanted to do, is work in a newsroom. And all I was a gopher. You go for this, you go for that. I was just a kid in the newsroom. There were several of us. Of course, I was the only one of color. And they put me in the photo department to be the gopher there. I discovered years later that they put me there because they didn't want me in the newsroom proper. But I didn't know any of that at the time. I was just happy to be working. And I came to work one day and found a note for me in my little workspace. And it said, "Nigger, go home." And honestly, my first response was, "I wonder who this is for." I didn't automatically think, "Oh, what an insult." I automatically thought, "What an odd thing to find here." Mm-hmm. And when I showed it to my boss, he instantly got what it was and was immediately apologetic. Of course, by then it was dawning on me this was for me.
Right.
And it dawned on everybody fairly quickly who had written it. It was an older white guy who felt threatened by my presence. But they didn't want to punish him. They didn't want to fire him, which is what they would have had to do if they publicly said who was responsible for it. So instead, they said, "Listen, you know, if you ever need a job, you ever need a place to be, you know, come back to us. We love you. We think you're great." In other words, you know, don't sue us, which of course I was too naive to have considered at the time. So I put that in my back pocket and had no intention of ever taking them up on it, because in my 1977 way, I thought that I would never work for these racists.
Right.
But I also realized a year later when I was looking for a job that there were no other jobs. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to them and said, "Remember this promise? Remember this chit?"
Yeah.
And so they gave me a job. And but then it was on me. Getting in the door because I had survived this insult or behaved in a certain way was one thing. But then when I got in, I had to prove to them that I could write, that I could meet a deadline, that I could be a good colleague in a newsroom, in a newsroom environment where, once again, I was one of very few people of color. So just getting in the door isn't enough. That's what I always say about affirmative action. It's nice that the door opens, but then what do you do once you walk through it? And that was the next challenge for me.
That's Gwen Ifill, the late and great Gwen Ifill, speaking back in 2009 on C-SPAN. And I want to go around the table and I'm not going to ask you if you don't want to share some of the worst of what you've heard. That's not the point. But I want to ask, just because I think it's important. I mean, I get listeners who don't like the show or like me or think that they would have done things differently. That's fine. But never anything like that. That's what privilege and advantage looks like, from just one example of it from my perspective. And Casey, what do you make of what you heard from Gwen and how that might reflect your own experience?
She's definitely not alone. I'm going to preface this by saying I haven't had any of these experiences here, thankfully. But out in Midland, Odessa, Texas, really small West Texas town with a 3% black population, they weren't too happy about this young black girl being on TV. Not at all. And we got plenty of emails explaining that they weren't too happy. You could always see that people were a lot more critical of me. Sometimes they would call me the N-word, you know, in emails that went out to the newsroom. And one that I remember the most was I did like a Facebook Live. And some guy wrote under, I believe that he was Mexican, which was shocking. But he wrote under and he said, Michelle Obama finally got a job. Way to go, dumb B. So I think that was supposed to be an insult, but I was so compelled to write back and let him know that Michelle Obama was the only first lady with 2 degrees from Ivy League school. So, you know, in hindsight, he actually gave me a compliment. So thank you. But, you know, it was just things like that all the time. And I'm very grateful to be in a place that is a lot more diverse and much more accepting of who I am. Because you can't conform to be someone else, because that has an impact on how you work. And, you know, if you feel more accepted, you work better. So, you know, I'm so grateful to be here. Hmm. Can't explain enough.
Teach Jenkins.
I just want to say that I know people who similar things have happened to. And that people do feel, or were in their current situations, that they have to jump through 10 hoops in comparison to what others jump through. And that the bar is set somewhat higher, or the expectations are different. And I've heard people talk about that quite often. And that, you know,
Tiana.
Okay. I think what really stood out to me wasn't even that, you know, that kind of post-it note on her desk, but that she made this promise to herself that she wouldn't work there. And then this industry, it didn't even matter. She had to break that, her own promise to herself. And, you know, what did that do for her career? Starting her career in a newsroom that clearly had very little respect for her dignity. Did she have as many opportunities as she should have gotten? And so for me, it's, I think sometimes we focus on this overt racism, and as horrible as that post-it note was, it's also just as bad that there was nothing else lined up for this amazing journalist, that she was turned away from other places, that she had to go back to Boston. And even, I mean, what did she deal with when she was there?
I could read an email that just came in. I'm debating whether I want to read that email.
Read it.
Definitely read it.
Evan, we all want diversity, but this fixation WXXI has on privilege, racism, people of color, etc., is getting old. Get over it and move on. America has unlimited opportunities.
I bet this is coming from a person who doesn't look like me. So they wouldn't
understand. It's a white
guy. Yeah. I would challenge that. Privilege? Even at WXXI, I mean, there's not a lot of diversity here. So that, I mean, that idea that, you know, there are all these opportunities, but when you go and you try and get those opportunities, they only exist verbally. They are never nailed down and you don't actually get them. So it's great that he thinks these opportunities exist. But if he does, we would love to be connected with them.
Please. And also, I encourage you to tune in to our special on News 10 NBC next week. Plug for us. It is 50 years later. How far have we come? So we take a look at the Civil Rights Act 50 years later. You know, where are we? And my specific focus is about jobs and unemployment. And we take a look at the statistics of Rochester and, you know, the large employers and how diverse they are. And I'll, spoiler alert, not very diverse.
And I love how he says to get over it. And it's like this, the reason that we're having this conversation is because we are not being represented. And there, the numbers show that statistically we're not in these, you know, we don't have the same opportunities. We're not in these positions. We can't just get over it. I'm sorry, whoever you are.
But I'm wondering where that information.
Yeah, there's no
like
get over
from.
It. The get over it is to fix it. I mean, and I don't, it's definitely not going to be fixed overnight, but there's definitely no get over it. You can never get over
it. And we need to have more of these conversations, not less of them.
Yeah, you know, my news director said something very interesting. He said, you know, you can't fix a diversity problem that you don't acknowledge. You have to first say, you know what, this, you know, there's not enough people of color here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to make an effort to fix that. So, but people tend to hire people that look like them. So unless they actually step back and look at their staff and want their staff to look a little different, it'll never change.
Yeah, I mean, John. Come on.
There's always a John, though. There's always a John.
You can't start with, we all want diversity, but get over it. Like, If you then acknowledge that there's significant underrepresentation, because one of the ways to start to work on that is to acknowledge it, to publicly air it out, to have conversations, to have people understand. So the notion of just getting over it is a good way to perpetuate it.
Yeah, another thing about the Johns of the world, they love to, you know, be these keyboard gangsters. Mm-hmm. You notice he didn't call. He sent an email.
He called last hour.
Okay. So. Just kidding.
All right, so after we take a couple more phone calls, I am going to ask our panelists what they think are the kinds of stories that are either undercovered or, you know, if we really did see much better representation of women of color in American journalism, the kinds of stories we maybe would see more of, or maybe something that comes to mind. But before we do that, let me go ahead and grab Rich in Rochester first up. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I'm listening to the conversation, and the John, I guess, like she said, there's so many Johns. But the other frustration is even getting in the door is that women of color, people of color, I mean, and just minorities in general, their input and contribution just is not valued. We're not paid the same amount. If we go out and we try to sell our services, we must sell it at 30 to 40% less. And one of them made a statement that they put up a higher bar for us. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they put up a lower bar, I mean, higher bar, as much as they refuse to see what we do. Mm-hmm. And also, they speak to this thing that I call, and I've been saying it for the longest time, as a man of color, I have to constantly tap dance. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the old Bojangles, and they would have him tap dancing on movies and all that. All the time, every day, you walk into a place, you got to tap dance across the floor. And you got to keep tap dancing. You can't tap dance. You can't stop tap dancing the first time. You got to do it always. You always have to be on point. You always have to be that much better. You always have to worry about being angry. You got to always worry about being on the team. If you sit in your office too long, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with her? These pressures that are constantly put on, it's not about just getting that job. It's that constant tap dancing that you must do at every moment of the day. And that's what really, really, in the end, that's just so insidious. Mm.
Rich, thanks for the phone call. Some thoughts from our panelists on that? I think there's just a lot of nodding.
I would agree. And on top of that, I think we forget that when you're tap dancing every day, what it does to your mental.
Yes.
You are drained. And it sometimes creates kind of this anger towards your workplace. And I mean, if you're constantly tap dancing, he mentions it, you can't stop, because the moment you stop, it's almost as if, not that you've never been tap dancing, but as if all of your work no longer matters, or as if everything you do from here on out will be held to, you know, kind of a different standard. So I think it's great that he mentioned that insane amount of pressure you have once you're in the job, because you do have to work twice as hard to get half of what everyone else has. Even me, I'm here, you know, early, I'm here late, I'm constantly smiling, I'm known for my energy around here. But I'll be honest, I'm only making a few bucks over minimum wage. So there's only, I mean, it shows you have to work so hard. And how much are you really taking home besides a tired brain?
Let me read another email from Erin. She says, speaking of lack of diversity, wasn't the host of Connections an African-American female until she was replaced by a white man? I love you, Evan, but I think it's worth mentioning. So, Erin, the answer is no, there was not a permanent host, but I want to take this head on. First of all, Bob Smith was the host of this program before I was. He was here in this chair for, I think, 25 years or so. And then when Bob got sick, a number of people kind of rotated as guest hosts. And certainly there were people of color in a rotation of people who were kind of filling shifts and hosting the show. I don't know. I don't have privy to who applied for the job. I can tell you that I applied, and I am very, very aware that the world in general doesn't need too many more white men with microphones. I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I'm aware of that. And
it's good that you acknowledge it.
Sure. Absolutely. So I think Aaron's question is valid. And if at the baseline, if I didn't acknowledge that, there would be a problem. Now, I also couldn't complain. Then the next step is, well, what happens if someone comes in tomorrow and says, like your work, but what we really need are more people of color here and there, and it might be you. You know what I think I would have to say? I get it. There's a lot of advantages in the world that I've had. And I could spend the whole hour telling you all the advantages I've had in my life. So I'm going to try to be the best toast I can on this program and acknowledge that. And Aaron, I appreciate the email, and I'm glad you emailed, because we can all do better. And it starts with me and people in positions of privilege and acknowledging those things. So thank you for that, Aaron. Let me grab another phone call. I think we have Paul in Brighton next up. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, good afternoon. So my exposure to journalism is basically what I see on TV. And, I read a lot of things online, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. I don't know who's behind the scenes on those print media and the online media. But on the air, I mean, I look at PBS. They have a number of Asian anchor people and some African-Americans. CNN has a lot of African-Americans on their panels and on their anchor people. And my impression, at least on these kinds of media, is that there is a pretty good representation. Tell me if I'm wrong, that there is a good representation of people of color. And maybe what you're referring to is people who are not on camera, people behind the scenes, the research people, the reporters who gather information. Maybe you're talking about that level. So that's one point. And the other is that, I mean, it is well known that African Americans have much less opportunity at educational opportunities, and it's reflected in the graduation rates in high schools and colleges and universities. So doesn't the low representation on the air and in print media reflect simply that there's less fewer African Americans and people of color graduating from universities?
Well, first, I want to introduce you to something called Historically Black Colleges and Universities that graduate plenty of well-qualified African-Americans and other people, too, other people of color and white people, too. I went to one, Florida A&M University, had to plug my school, but I don't think it's a lack of qualified people of color. That's not it.
Yeah, and Paul, I mean, I just want to be straight with you. You're wrong. I mean, we do not have representation that's anywhere close, in particular women of color, but people of color in American newsrooms. It's pretty white. And the notion that, well, maybe it's not the people we hear or see on camera. Well, number one, that matters. That really matters. Number two, it's not, and it's not a case of, well, it's equal representation, it's just people are behind the scenes. No, that's not true either.
Neither.
No.
The answer, in front or behind.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, I don't mean to be rude. I'm just looking at a lot of research, a lot of good data, and our thanks to our colleague Rhonda Austin, who was the one who pointed us out to the 2018 study on this, on just women of color in particular. So thank you, Rhonda, for doing that. And Paul, I appreciate the idea that maybe, you know, it appears at times, but no, the answer is no. There's not nearly equal representation. It's a significant underrepresentation. And that is true essentially at all levels in American newsrooms.
Can I add something?
Yeah, yeah.
I would also add Black women are quickly becoming the most educated in America.
So, statistics show.
Yes, statistics show that they are quickly growing. I mean, they're growing at higher rates. They're graduating at higher rates. They're making up more of our classes. So the idea that, you know, because they're not graduating college, that's why they're not qualified. Going back to Casey, we clearly are qualified. Not only are we graduating, but a lot of Black women are actually graduating at top of their class. So I take issue with everything from the qualification to there being diversity if you say that you're only exposed to journalism by what you see on TV. So.
But CNN, I will give them their props. You know, in recent years, panels do seem more progressive. They used to have a lot of panels talking about Black issues with no Black people. Like, it was, you thought you were watching Fox. But, because Fox is still like that. We all know that. But they have done better. But it still is not representative of the United States population. Even when you look at the number of Black people on CNN or Hispanic people who have, you know, who have shows. I mean, there aren't too many. I mean, besides, like, Don Lemon, who else is?
Joy Reid, I'm trying to think. But anyway, I'm done our last 90 seconds. Oh, yeah, go ahead,
I just wanted to say that, we've got to stop with that better some than none. It's like, that's what I keep hearing. Yeah. It's like this repetition. It's not. We need more. That's the bottom line.
Great point. And on this note, about 30 seconds apiece, what are the kinds of stories that might stand out to you that we think are either undercovered or not really covered at all that with better representation we'd see more of? Tiana Mignon.
I'd say overall just more in the city. But I was actually talking to a few educators, and there are some really interesting things that's happening in education. But so often we get focused on the big stuff. Can we do a better job talking about truancy? Why are kids staying at home? Can we use our reporters who look like these students, have the same background, to go to these homes and actually talk to parents and get of resources that we've never had in our local news? So I think just overall we can do a better job of using our people of color to get stories that we haven't had yet.
Teach Jenkins.
I like Tiana's your mention of how Black women are becoming more and more educated, mm-hmm. and our graduation rates at the university level. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to hear more of those
coverage of those stories.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Casey.
Yeah, there's a lot of positive news going on in the community, and I think that should be showcased. And I also think it's, you know, as journalists, our job is to kind of force empathy on people, help them understand that, you know, it's not as easy as they might think it is, you know. Everything's not as black and white as they might think it is. And because when you kind of have a different outlook on life, you can kind of, you know, tell the story differently and maybe help that person explain why they're in the position that they're in or whatever it might be. So there needs to be more of us, bottom line.
Casey Jones is a reporter at WHEC-TV. And say it again, what's coming up next week that you want people to check out?
Oh, our MLK special, 50 Years Later, How Far Have We Come? That's on April 11th at 7:30 p.m., only on News 10 NBC.
I've never heard of it. Thank you for being here. Really appreciate having you. Teach Jenkins, who is manager and producer for City 12 and host of Arts in Focus on WXXI-TV. We'll see you on Arts in Focus when?
Fridays, Eddie.
Tonight.
Tonight. It is Friday. Oh, my gosh. It is Friday. Yay.
Fridays at?
At 8:30.
Great having you. Thank you for
Thank
being
you so
here.
Much, Evan.
Tiana Mignon, reporter right here at WXXI News. You'll hear her work on our airwaves and editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. Open Mic Magazine online, openmicroc.com.
Yep.
Thank you. Always good to have you
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
John Andrus, engineering, Megan Mack producing. I'm Evan Dawson. Great conversations today. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday on member-supported public radio. We'll